south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's talk about some stuff that I think you're only going to hear on this show, or maybe after you've lived down here off the trail for many years. First, you might recall that maybe half a year ago now, my cleaning lady wrecked my really nice microphone, so I had to get another. Now, in all other ways, she was a pretty good cleaning lady. Being from the campo, that means out in the boonies, she, like probably 80% of the lower classes, doesn't have access to all the modern appliances in her own home, so you shouldn't assume when they first start working for you that you could just let them in the house in the morning and say, have at it. You will regret that. Anyway, you know, one of the great things about having a cleaning lady come in is that she'll cook for you, she'll shop for you, and she'll never, ever say she won't do something like, for example, toilets and windows. So anyway, the cleaning lady that I've had for quite a while now, who wrecked my microphone, well, yesterday she blew up the microwave oven. I was in the living room and I heard a big pop coming out of the kitchen. I walked in there and saw her staring at the smoke coming out of the microwave oven. Turns out she put a piece of chicken in there for herself for lunch. And instead of setting the timer for 2 minutes, she set it for 20 minutes. Honest mistake, I'm sure that's happened to a lot of us. We misprogrammed our microwave oven and burned something up. Here's the odd part. That was the first time she ever used a microwave oven in her life. Now, I'm not big on microwave ovens myself. I only use them once in a while to heat water for coffee. And my cleaning lady, who always makes me lunch, she does it over the stove. She's never used the microwave. And you know, in all the months she's been working for me, we never had a conversation about that microwave oven. I guess I thought she knew how to use it, because hell, it's in the kitchen and she has access every time she's here. Except I have seen her watch me heat water in it a couple of times. Of course, it never crossed my mind that she'd never used one before. But I know the average cleaning lady, especially indigenous cleaning ladies coming from the boonies, most have never used a dishwasher or a vacuum cleaner before. That's right. Here in Latin America, only upscale houses have vacuum cleaners. Sounds weird, I know, but it's true. So as it turns out, on her own initiative, she tried to heat up her lunch after watching me a few times heat up some water, and she just didn't get it right. And believe me, when that thing blew up, you should have seen the look of terror on her face. On top of that, she had the chicken in a plastic Tupperware bowl. And you don't want to put plastic in a microwave oven. You knew that already, right? The monomers get vaporized and penetrate right into your food. Not good. But plastic dishes and bowls, that, unfortunately, is what everyone down here anyway uses to heat their food up. And you know, really, it never crossed my mind that she didn't know how to use the thing. And basically, she doesn't talk much, so when I said, what did you do? How did you program it? She didn't know what I was talking about. She said, program it? I don't know. It was my first time. But obviously, you know, from that experience, she'll be gun-shy the rest of her life when confronted with a microwave. Now, I'm telling you this story to give you a heads up. A heads up on the fact that you can't assume, once you hired a maintenance guy or a cleaning lady, that they're up on modern conveniences. And to that point, you know, I've always had a vacuum cleaner around the house and a wet-dry shop vac too. But I've never ever seen one of the cleaning ladies I've had over the last 30 years now plug one in and use it. And though I've showed a few of them, I've walked them through how to do it. They just seem a little afraid to touch the thing. They'd much rather stick with their tried and true methods. That is, a bucket with soap and water, disinfectant, rags, broom, and a wet mop. So let that be a warning to you. You have to train them up. Don't assume anything. Though they do learn fast. Like with most of us, you have to repeat things a few times. Some of them are extremely bright, but they just had no opportunity to go to school or get ahead. Though some are as dumb as a box of rocks. For example, a gringo expat friend of mine, Lawrence, told me a while back that he was sitting out on his patio and he smelled something burning in the house. He ran into the laundry room and saw his cleaning lady was freaking out because the clothes dryer had caught on fire. Now remember, here in Latin America, only gringos, expats, and upscale Latinos have clothes dryers. Anyway, as it turns out, no one had ever told Lawrence's cleaning lady that she had to empty the lint filter, and it had months and months of lint built up in the air outlet system. And eventually it blocked the flow so much and got so hot that it caught fire, along with a whole batch of his clothes. But luckily enough, the house was made mostly out of concrete, glass, and steel, like practically every decent house here in Latin America. And though the dryer and the clothes were toasted, The only lasting effect was a kind of a singed smell around the cleaning room and kitchen for some months. But here's the thing. Right next to the dryer was a 50-pound tank of propane gas. I mean, hey, that's how you get the gas for the gas dryer. So there was some momentary panic because the hose from the tank to the dryer was made out of a flexible, you know, the braided plastic. That's what most people use down here, though the best way to go is always copper. In the end, though nothing really tragic happened, with that gas tank sitting right there, it could have gone south fast. Bottom line is, cleaning lady wasn't quite trained up. She'd never operated a gas dryer before, or any clothes dryer for that matter, and didn't know anything about a lint filter. By the way, if you hear some drilling, banging, and pounding, there is some construction going on right next door. Another one of my projects, I'll tell you about it sometime. Oh, and here's something funny. The other day I was sitting in a sidewalk cafe. You know, those outdoor cafes are great people-watching spots. And these days, of course, with the COVID lockdowns and stuff, there's not too many people to watch. Anyway, I was sitting at an outside table under an awning, drinking an espresso and having a brownie, when two guys, kind of upscale-looking, educated, 30-something guys, walked by, both sporting T-shirts. And one of the guys' T-shirt had a mugshot of none other than Tesla. No, not the car Tesla, nor Elon Musk. I'm talking about Nikola Tesla. You know, the guy that basically invented electrical power distribution as we know it, and the electric motors and generators as we know them today. He's the father of AC current, you know. A real genius and Elon Musk's hero, too. Obviously, I mean, he uses Tesla's name on his car. Anyway, as these two guys were walking by, I said to the one with the Tesla T-shirt, when he got close, about 10 feet away, I said, "Tesla, my hero." And his eyes lit up and he walked over to my table. And here's what he said. He said, "I've had this T-shirt for 3 years. I wear it a lot. And you're the first person who's ever recognized who it was." Now, the picture was just a headshot of Tesla. It didn't have his name emblazoned anywhere. So you really had to be familiar with the guy to know who he was. So anyway, the two guys sat down at the table next to me, and then they ordered. And I said, "Let me guess, you must be into tech or engineering or something. That's the only explanation as to why you'd have Tesla's mug on your shirt." Now, he and his buddy looked like gringos, but they weren't. Dressed a little nicer and a little better put together than your average tourist. They had their own kind of style. They spoke Spanish, so I figured they're from Spain. And they were, from Barcelona. Funny thing, if you're a seasoned traveler, sooner or later, you start to recognize Europeans from a distance. They've got a different kind of look to them, a different kind of style. They carry themselves differently, too. Have you noticed that? In fact, when I first got down to Latin America a couple of decades ago, lots of 20 and 30-something European guys would have a leather shoulder bag or purse. Stylish, but what we'd call back then, gay. And back then, American guys wouldn't be caught dead with something like that. In retrospect, it's easy to see that in regards to fashion, it's us Americans who are stuck in lag time, with Europeans at the forefront. But where were we? Oh yeah, at the little restaurant slash outdoor cafe. After a while, one of the guys pulled out his wallet to pay the bill. And on his wallet, there was an embossed B, you know, the Bitcoin symbol. And instantly I said, "Ah, you're into crypto, huh?" I said, "Good for you." He said, "Yeah, that's how I paid for this trip, but I don't go bragging about it." Then his friend, the Tesla guy, said, "Yeah, he used to have a Bitcoin T-shirt, but he quit wearing it after Bitcoin hit around 10,000 bucks. Because then," he said, "as you probably know, we started hearing stories and news reports about people getting kidnapped and held for ransom. Mostly people who bragged a lot about having Bitcoin and Lamborghini and all that. A lot of those people," he said, "the early adopters learned their lessons. At first, they were so happy to tell the world they'd broadcast it, with Bitcoin symbols on their T-shirts, watches, symbols and Bitcoin stickers on their smartphones and luggage. And in hindsight, that was a very stupid thing to do, because they were targets for bad guys. And we all agreed that now, anyone who has a Bitcoin T-shirt or hat, whatever, is probably a newbie, a lightweight, and not as smart as he thinks. It's like driving around the ghetto in a Ferrari. Only an idiot would want that kind of attention." Oh, by the way, that reminds me. Do you remember on the last show, it was mentioned that the suffix enero, E-N-R-O, it's often tacked on to the end of a word to signify that it's a person's job or skill. Like, for example, a truck is a camión and a truck driver, a camionero, and a carpenter, a carpintero. Well, oddly enough, that's how Bitcoin users and Bitcoin aficionados are tagged down here in Latin America. So if you're into Bitcoin, you're a Bitcoinero. I'm not kidding. Bitcoinero. And cryptocurrencies in general are called crypto monedas. You know, moneda is one of the Spanish terms used for coins. along with a few others like cambio, which means change, plata, which means silver, and centavos, meaning cents. There's a few other terms for coins and a lot of local slang for coins, too. But somehow, Latinos settled on the term criptomonedas for cryptocurrencies. And since we're talking about things translated in Spanish right now, here's another observation that'll strike you funny the longer you're down here and if you're paying attention. It's something extremely common here in Latin America that you almost never see up in the States, unless you happen to be with people who've had too much to drink, or Captain Mango, whether he's been drinking or not. I'm talking about spontaneous singing. Yep, belting out a song or part of a song out of nowhere. Anytime, any place. Good example, just yesterday, I was invited to lunch, family get-together, the girlfriend's house, with a couple of friends and relatives invited too. And you know, Latinos, they love their music and they love it loud. So anyway, we're sitting down at the dinner table. The music's in the background, a little too loud for me, even though I spent many years as a rockero. Yep, there is that E-R-O ending again, rockero. That means rock musician. As opposed to reggaetoneros. That'd be reggaeton players or reggaeton aficionados. Of course, reggaeton's not real music, but you knew that already, right? Anyway, here's what you'll notice, and I saw it happen 5 or 6 times yesterday. A certain song will come on the radio or the smartphone, and somebody in the room or at the table will join right in and start singing that song, loud too. Now, I'm not saying they'll all join in. It's usually just one person wailing away just for a couple of lines, verses, or a chorus. Then it's back to eating, drinking, or watching Netflix or whatever again. Hey, and it's not just confined to people sitting in the house either. I've seen it on street corners, restaurants, in taxis, even on the subway. People have their favorite songs, the flavor of the month, you know. And believe me, you could be in the Nike store buying a pair of shoes, and you'll hear somebody somewhere in that store. Could be the guy waiting on you, singing along to something when he's so inspired. Stranger yet, those impulse vocalizations are in no way gender or age specific. You'll hear it from grandpas, grandmas, guys, girls, and those who fall in between. It is obviously a cultural thing, with absolutely no shame or embarrassment involved. Directly, I'm certain, related to the happiness factor. Obviously, no one breaks out into a chorus of song if they're sad or not feeling so good. Now, I know for some it might sound like a trivial thing to bring up, but here's my question to you guys and gals living up in the States, Canada, even in Europe. How many times can you actually say you've done that? Or you've been with people who just break into a song, probably only when people have had too much to drink, or in Hollywood musicals? It just seems that North Americans, gringos, and expats don't have that spontaneity or lack of inhibition, unless under the influence of something. Look, I've been a B-grade musician all my life. And though a lot of my friends are or have been musicians, they just don't spontaneously belt out a verse while sitting at a bus stop or in a car repair shop. Even the singer in an American band would never belt out a song while standing in line at Taco Bell. But with Latinos, the same thing applies to dancing and public displays of affection. Let me tell you one of the cool things about having a Latin girlfriend or boyfriend. It's that they seem to have just so much more spontaneity and positive energy than your average gringo or expat. I guess it's because they're not worrying all the time what people think. Not to mention they don't care one bit how crappy their voice may sound, and no one around listening to it cares either. Why? Because someone right next to them might just break out into a chorus at any time too. That's why I say a lot of this has to do with the happiness factor. I mean, really, when's the last time you were at a party, dinner, even in a bathroom, and a song came over the speakers and someone in the vicinity busted a move or belted out a few words of a verse? You know, a couple of weeks ago, I was at one of those all-inclusive resorts. I walked into a bathroom, you know, to freshen up a bit. I was at the sink, washing up, and some guy in the crapper started singing along to some classic Spanish ballad that was piped in over the speakers. Only in Latin America, huh? Fact is, you know, from what I can see, for gringos and expats and people living up in the States, happiness is what everyone wants, though it seems to be hard work because it's so fleeting. But here in Latin America, if you pay attention, you'll see it's just so common. It's everywhere. Bottom line, Latinos and Latinas are so much less uptight than us gringos and expats. Take the word anal. It's only got one meaning in Spanish, the biological one. By the way, how many units of happiness have you generated lately? Oh, and here's something you're never going to hear anywhere else. I was at another little get-together about a month ago. I was out on the balcony looking at the view when a 40-something guy sat down close to me, lit up a cigarette. We started talking a bit in Spanish, of course. He didn't speak any English. And naturally, the subject came around to, as it does in most conversations when you meet somebody for the first time, what do you do for a living? Oh, but first I have to say we went over the preliminaries. That is, we talked a bit about his relatives up in the States. That's always a topic. It never fails when a Latino down here meets a gringo like you or me. Out come the stories of the relatives living up in the States. Just in case you know, you may have run into one at the 7-Eleven. You'll hear about Julio in Chicago, Jorge in Nueva Jersey, Chepe in Miami. Oh, and they're really quick to tell you which of their relatives are legal in the States, too. That's a point of pride for Latinos living here in Latin America. Because when they've got a relative or two up in the States that are legal, with a green card or a passport, he's the fair-haired boy or girl in the family, the one who's made it. Being legal, he's able to sponsor more relatives to come up to the States. So, Latinos living down in Latin America always want to stay on that guy's good side. Even if he or she's a dyed-in-the-wool dickhead, there's always hope and a chance that guy will sponsor more relatives. So anyway, I'm sitting down with this guy. We got the relatives in the States thing out of the way, and I asked him what he did for a living. He said, get this, his wife is a regional distributor for Mary Kay. Hey, you know Mary Kay, right? It's like the ladies' cosmetics version of Tupperware. You know, coffee clutches and ladies' house parties, etc. Hawking that stuff. You know, every neighborhood here in Latin America has its Mary Kay, Avon, Amway, and Tupperware reps. And though it may not be a big thing anymore in the States, it was 30 or 40 years ago, I know. Down here, it's huge. So anyway, this guy's wife's a regional rep, not just a local house party lady. Then he pointed down the road to his car, a black 2015 Hyundai Tucson. They don't say Tucson, they say Tucson, with big pink Mary Kay letters stenciled on the side, with the obligatory dings, bangs, and scratches of any car here in Latin America that's 5 years old. Then he made a sour face and said, but this COVID thing, the lockdowns, the closing of businesses, the lack of jobs has put a huge dent in the Mary Kay business. Though you'd think, he said, ladies' cosmetics and beauty products would be recession-proof, because ladies always want to look good, come hell or high water. But, you know, the kids and the rent come first, so sacrifices are the order of the day. But then he gave me a kind of a snaky smile and winked and said, but my other business, it's going gangbusters. And his other business? He's a loan shark. So in the next half hour, I learned everything I wanted to know about loan sharking. That was something I thought worth knowing about. The secrets of loan sharking you won't be able to look up on the internet either. Like, for example, he gets 40% a month on his loans. He collects every 15 days, and he makes sure he's well collateralized. He's got his clients signing away their cars, their motorcycles, furniture, jewelry, kitchen appliances. Yep, that's the collateral he makes sure if they don't pay, he never loses. He also said 80% of his clients are women. Not that there aren't tons of males that want to take out gray market loans. It's just that he said women are more honest, dependable, and are good payers. They've got their household and kids to take care of, so it's a big responsibility. Whereas the guys, especially ones that can't get a loan at a bank and have to resort to loan sharks, it's generally, he says, because they have bad habits like gambling, drinking, or they're always between jobs because they can't hold one very long, for whatever reason. But think about it, 40% a month. He further explained that he's only got about $5,000 invested in the loan shark business because that's all he can afford to spare. He's got six kids, and the Mary Kay thing isn't putting out like it used to. He said he keeps rotating that $5,000, which pays out at 40%, around $2,000 a month. Imagine that. Then he confessed he wishes he had 2, 3, 4, or 5 times as much to loan out because he's got so many clients waiting in the wings to take a loan, but he doesn't have the available cash to do it. Then I said, so does that mean you might be looking for someone to go in with you, someone with some available cash, a silent partner, let's say? He said, yeah, that would be nice, but everyone who I trust and have confidence in is broke. And he said, and the guys that do have the cash, well, they're not nice guys, so I don't want to go into business with them. Then I said, suppose, hypothetically, you found someone you trust, a nice guy who could match that dough for you. But he wants to be a completely silent partner. In other words, they just throw in the dough, and they don't want to know anything. They just want to get their percentage every month. You said you make 40% a month. What would be the split with that silent partner? He said, if I did all the work and they were the silent partner, I'd take 15%, they'd get 25% a month. I said, yeah, that's a hell of a return, but what are the risks? From what I know, it's a touchy business. It could get physical. He said he'd been doing it for over 5 years and had no problems at all because, for one, and the most important thing is the vast majority of his clients are women. And number two, even if after a while someone keeps rolling it over because they can't come up with any principal payments after less than 3 months at 40% a month, no matter what happens after that, you've got all your money back. Then I said, you mean you haven't had to break anyone's legs lately? He laughed and said he's not that kind of loan shark. The guys that get violent, he said, are the ones that loan without getting collateral. And with no collateral, they get much more than 40% a month. And here's the topper. He said, you just wouldn't believe how many middle-class and lower-middle-class ladies in the neighborhood are constantly borrowing from neighborhood loan sharks. There are loan sharks in every neighborhood. Especially, he said, around Christmas, the holidays, graduation. With most any big holiday or family event coming around, his WhatsApp is just clogged with neighborhood ladies looking to borrow $100, $50, or even $25 at 40% a month. And I'm thinking, what a racket. Now, if you're thinking that I was thinking maybe to be the silent partner with this guy, well, it's tempting, all right, but I don't think so. And of course, I've always known loan sharks exist everywhere in the world, and Latin America's got them in every neighborhood. In fact, early on, when I first started visiting those giant markets to buy produce and such, places that are jam-packed with people selling all kinds of stuff where you rarely see a gringo. I was told early on by my lawyer that in every one of those markets, there are a couple of loan sharks that have their little tables and booths set up permanently, catering to the truck farmers coming in and the people selling stuff at their produce stands. He told me, the lawyer that is, that if you were well known around the market there, you could borrow $100,000 or equivalent in the local funny money for a month, a week, or even 1 day, with farmers putting up their trucks as collateral and vendors putting up their spots. Because, you know, to set up a stand and sell stuff in the big market, you gotta buy or rent a spot. So basically, loan sharking, whether you're borrowing $25 or $100,000, it's a way of life here in Latin America. And Latin governments know full well it's going on, but they don't do a single thing about it. And I suppose, according to statutes, my lawyer tells me anyway, it is illegal. But being that it's a necessary evil, to keep the wheels of commerce greased, they just completely ignore it. You could tell that by looking at the classified ads in the local Spanish language newspapers. The loan sharks always advertise money to lend, and it's up front and in your face. But they never reveal what interest rate they're going to charge you. In person, yes, but not in the classifieds. I also found out that 40% a month figure is negotiable, depending, that loan shark guy said, on the payment history of the person when they took out their last loan. If they're good payers and always pay on time, he might knock a few points off. And for bad or late payers, he'll add points. Oh, and speaking of classified ads and, of course, all the newspapers here in Latin America that are online now, too. You've heard me talk about that Latin American Craigslist called OLX.com. It's in something like 14 Latin American countries now. Well, just recently, a new kind of competition to OLX.com has come online. It's called Encuentra24.com. Encuentra, 24, that is the numbers 2 and 4, 24.com. So it's Encuentra24.com. All one word, no spaces. So far, it's available in Panama, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Honduras, Dominican Republic, Colombia, and Puerto Rico. And you'll love this. You can click on the English tab and you'll get most of the items in English. That as opposed to OLX.com, which in Latin American countries anyway is strictly in Spanish. Though worldwide, OLX.com is in 30 different countries. All right, now for some news on the COVIDiot front. You know that as of now, anyone arriving in the U.S. needs to have a negative COVIDiot test. You know, we're talking about that blatantly erroneous PCR test. Anyway, outside the U.S., the tourism business, which depends heavily on U.S. clients, has just announced that some of their big hotels and resorts, especially in Mexico and Latin America, have arranged for COVID-19 tests to be administered to guests at no charge at their hotel on the day before they're supposed to leave and go back to the U.S. So far, hundreds of hotels and all-inclusive resorts are promising to provide those tests on site. And most of those hotels and resorts are offering the test for free, provided you're staying at the resort, of course. But here's the kicker, and it's a nice kicker. Well, depending on how you look at it anyway. Many of those hotels and all-inclusive tourism companies are also covering the cost of an extended stay that might happen, including accommodations, meals, beverages, etc. If, by chance, you were to test positive on that day before you're supposed to leave for the States. In other words, what they're saying is if you test positive while at the resort, you'll get a free extended vacation. They'll quarantine you to the hotel or resort you're booked in, and you'll be able to stay there for however days it takes for you to test negative. Also note that the tests they will provide at these hotels and resorts will be the antigen tests, which differ from the PCR tests. Those antigen tests are accepted for international flights to the U.S., but are not accepted on flights to Canada. By the way, I have a big list of hotels, companies, and resorts that are providing this free on-site testing. It's way too big a list to repeat right here, with new hotels and resorts being added to the list hourly. Meanwhile, we have new evidence of the metastasizing cancer the U.S. government has grown into. My evidence? Well, what was supposed to have been a positive news story out of Business Insider saying that Biden plans to replace the U.S. government's automobile fleet of 650,000 vehicles with electric models in a shift to clean energy, projected, by the way, to cost over $5 billion. On the surface, that sounds great. Go electric. And even though I'm a libertarian, I say everything the government buys should be U.S. sourced and made, even though that's slightly anti-libertarian. So shoot me. Anyway, the real message you should be getting from this is that the U.S. government has a fleet of 650,000 vehicles. An absolutely astoundingly ridiculous and wasteful number. And of course, the mechanics and garages and tools and supplies and insurance and gas and diesel to support that fleet too. Let me ask you this, are you all right with that or does that piss you off too? You know, 3/4 or more of all the countries in the world don't have near as many privately owned vehicles. But 650,000? Come on. Yep, once again, it's your tax dollar down the rat hole. Or you could say it's just another $5 billion added to the $28 trillion deficit that's already down the rat hole. And yet there are people out there, very smart people, who still want government to run the healthcare system. Yeah, that'll work. Look at that sterling gem of a program, Obamacare. That was a real gift to the masses, huh? Don't make me laugh. Meanwhile, my email box is filling up like never before. People want to cut loose from the States in the worst way. They're getting it, finally. Owen, how's your plan B coming?
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.